guy had no filter. He just said exactly what was on his mind through his...
You're listening to WGXC Acra, Hudson, Catskill, 90.7 FM.
Me and my arrow, straighter than narrow. Wherever we go, everyone knows it's me and my arrow.
Tune in or turn out to the July 18th edition of the Ukuleles Unleashed show on WGXC. This month it is broadcast live from the Bridge Street Theater in Catskill. Host Carmen Borgia and John Sturman are doing a reading and singing Harry Nilsson's The Point on ukuleles and then doing their live radio show in front of an audience at the Bridge Street Theater. Admission is free to this WGXC event. Turn out or tune in to the Bridge Street Theater, 7:45 to 10 p.m. on Tuesday, July 18th at wgxc.org/listen and 90.7 FM.
WGXC underwriting support is provided in part by SunCommon, supporting vibrant communities across New York for 15 years, offering custom solar installations for homes, farms, and businesses. Information at suncommon.com.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Alexander Adam of Athens, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate. Thank you for your support.
Good evening, and thank you for joining. Tonight, I am Kimberly Y. Irwin, your host of Race Talks on WGXC 90.7 FM, awayfarm.org enterprise. Here, every third Tuesday of the month from 7 p.m. to 8 p.m. is where we have the very necessary conversation on race and ethnicity. Why talk about race? You may ask. The answer is to simply combat racism. For this, we must be educated and communicate. It is my hope tonight that you, too, will come to know that there's one race, the human one, and many ethnicities. The bottom line here is you'll find us keeping it real on Waste Talks, where no topic is taboo.
No topic is taboo.
Thank you. Okay, so we have a really wonderful guest tonight. We're having a great episode because it's very timely. Our conversation is going to take us from looking at America as this beacon on the hill to seeing it with its flaws and talking about how do we overcome it or what do we do to make it better for us, because nothing is in stone. We can always be better as a nation and as a people. So we're going to also introduce a very interesting new segment called First, Our Race Talks Jeopardy. So if you like games, which I know at least one of my special guests today does, we will have a lot of fun with that. I'm going to open us up today with the recognition of a poem that is by Emma Lazarus. Now, if you know me a little bit, you'll know that I was a teacher and I taught high school English in Florida. And one of the poems that I had my ninth grade students read was this poem. We won't be sharing with you the entirety of the poem. We don't have time for that, but we do want to let you hear how important this place was called America for those people who were not living here. and what it represented to those people coming in from other lands. So do we have that poem on tap, so to speak? Great, let's listen to that by Emma Lazarus.
The New Colossus by Emma Lazarus. Not like the brazen giant of Greek fame, with conquering limbs astride from land to land. Here at our sea-washed sunset gates shall stand a mighty woman with a torch, whose flame is the imprisoned lightning, and her name, Mother of Exiles. From her beacon hand glows worldwide welcome. Her mild eyes command the air-bridged harbor that twin cities frame. Keep, ancient lands, your storied pomp, cries she with silent lips. Give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free, the wretched refuse of your teeming shore. Send these, the homeless, tempest-tossed to me. I lift my lamp beside the golden door.
Well, I think this is the perfect segue into opening with my introduction of our guest talker today. One of our guest talkers, who I am really happy to have here because our theme is educating our youth. And this, I want to call her a young lady, but she's not that quite that young. I don't mean as an age, but she certainly has grown very much since the time I met her as a student at Skidmore College. And her name is Kimoy, and I'm going to call her Briscoe. Kimoy Briscoe. She's an educator in higher education administration. Currently, I'm going to let her give you a little bit more of a background, but why I think it's really important that this is a segue, because her family, our immigrant, comes from a different country. And when she shared with me her background, and when I hear her story and see how well she flourished in our educational system, I think this is exactly what Emma Lazarus was talking about when she talked about coming to this country as, like I said before, at the beginning on the Hill. Also, we will have a little bit later, Garrett Roche, who I would say is our number one Race Talks fan, as well as former WJXC host and current podcaster of his own very entertaining Garrett Roche production called The Roche Solid Truth. And you can see that on www.rochesolidtruth.com. But he's going to come in later. He's going to be playing a game with us. And I think he thinks he's going to win because he likes these types of trivia questions. But this is going to be a little difficult. You're going to have to pay attention, Garrett. So Garrett, I'm going to bring you in later because I know how much you love and support WGXD. And this is a pledge drive summer campaign that we would like to have, and I want to get your perspective on what makes WJXC and wayfarm.org a great place to listen and to share your views and enjoy the talk. Okay, so again, my first guest talker is Kimoy Briscoe. She was a former student of mine at Skidmore College when I was the Multicultural Student Affairs Director. We had lots of different organizations there. We had Raices, which was a Latin group. We had Ujima, which is an African-American student group, as well as ACA, Asian Cultural Awareness, and then many more. Depending on what someone's religious background was, we had the Muslim groups and an LGBTQ group. So I got to be familiar with a lot of different students and their backgrounds, but this person, she was very special to me, and we actually was going to invite a few of her fellow students on too, but they couldn't make it this time, but they're certainly gonna make it in the future. So I wanna welcome Kimoy Briscoe. Moy, thank you for being on the show. Can you share with our listeners what made you feel confident about sharing your perspectives on educating our youth today?
Well, good evening, everyone. And thank you, Kimberly, for that introduction. To answer your question, what made me confident about sharing with our youth about education today? Simply because, like everyone else, I've gone through the education system. So I have a lived experience of the American education system as a Black woman in America. And but I think overall, we all have a story to share when it comes to education and our experience, no matter what our ethnicity is or what our assigned race is in this country. So I think we all have valid viewpoints and a voice to share. And I thank you for the opportunity to be able to add my voice and my perspective and my experience in today's on today's show. So thank you for having me.
You're most welcome. I wanted to make sure I share with the listeners that segue. Your parents are coming from what nation?
So my parents and I come from the nation of Jamaica, the island nation of Jamaica in the Caribbean. So I am an immigrant as well. I was born in Jamaica and I migrated to the United States when I was 8 years old. Obviously, my dad came before me and paved that path for the rest of the family to be able to come to America and to pursue our goals in this country, in this nation. So I am of Caribbean immigrant origin.
That was something I didn't know. I knew your parents came from Jamaica. So though I know this, I know the listeners don't know I know, so I have to make it seem like I don't know. But I didn't actually know that you too was born in Jamaica.
Yes.
Oh, how wonderful.
Yes.
And then since you no longer live there, I want to say that you hail from Queens, New York.
Yes. So I, when I moved from Jamaica, I moved to Queens, New York. I've lived in various communities within Queens, including Ozone Park, South Ozone Park, Richmond Hill, and Jamaica. Those are my stomping grounds. So I am a New Yorker. After New York, I met Kimberly, as she shared earlier in the podcast, in Saratoga Springs, New York, when I was a student at Skidmore College. And from there, I've been to other places in the United States. My migrant journey continues. So I've lived in Virginia for a time. And I currently now reside in Georgia. I've spent some time in Florida as well. And I see myself continuing to move and adapt because I like experiencing new people and places and cultures. So that will expand. And that's for the U.S. I've visited many places across the globe, but that is not the topic of today's conversation.
Well, the topic is, as we mentioned, educating our youth. And I think I want to share a line from the New Colossus. Mm-hmm. It says, "Give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free, the wretched refuse of your teeming shore. Send these, the homeless, tempest-tossed to me. I lift my lamp beside the golden door." That does not sound like you and your parents, however. When I met you, with you being at Skidmore College, you were already ready to be integrated into the Skidmore community. However, like I mentioned, we did have those different groups. So what is your perspective on having the ability to go to a school where majority of people may not look like you or come from where you come from? Because you said you hail from New York City and you've been around a lot of different people. That wasn't the case in Saratoga.
No, that was not. And the line that you quoted in the poem, I wouldn't necessarily say that it doesn't apply to me. So we are Jamaican immigrants. And, you know, through my father was able to come to the country after many experiences and many struggles in Jamaica himself, but at a point in his young journey joined the military, and that enabled him to pave a way to the U.S. But that doesn't mean that, but for us, we didn't come from, say, a middle class or high class society in Jamaica. We are like many of the immigrants who find themselves here, who come to the United States for opportunity or the promise of opportunity. So I wouldn't say that that line in the poem doesn't apply to us. And through my education journey as well, I've had to overcome a few obstacles that relate to being an immigrant and a student of color. And Skidmore was a wonderful opportunity, but for a student, it wasn't an easy road to get there. I had my own journey to walk and obstacles to jump over to get to Skidmore. So I would say that is very applicable to me as well. So to just give a little bit more background, because I recently had to kind of share this experience. I am an applicant, a reapplicant to grad school. I'm still climbing that education journey as a woman of color. And I had to share the experience of when I first came here, and I came here at the age of 8 years old. You know, kids are kids and kids can be brutal. And this is a common experience everywhere, possibly, you know, common experience in many places. But I had, you know, I, like many students, face bullies, and I face bullies not only for the color of my skin, but I was, a chunky or a round little girl, so for my size as well. And then I also faced, you know, bullies or people who didn't understand me and took the opportunity to tease me for my accent, because my accent was very thick at the time. And in that experience, I know it took me a few years, but I remember my first year in this country, I spent like a good year and even went through tutoring kind of just to working to get rid of my accent, you know, to speak proper English because of some of those experiences. And then, you know, through that education journey, I faced teachers who, you know, didn't believe in me. You know, in elementary school, I had a sixth grade teacher who didn't believe in my potential and tried to kind of sabotage the opportunities that were presented in front of me. So he discouraged my father, even though I had the grade point average to get into an advanced curriculum for middle school, discouraged my father from putting me into that curriculum, and just other stories like that. So I've had that, I would say I've had that full immigrant experience of having to, or just, yeah, full experience of having to overcome obstacles placed in your way as an immigrant and as a person of color in America.
Well, Kamora, I want to say I understand and I agree with you in the fact that you are not unlike many of the immigrants that came for a better way. But when I read that line, "wretched refuse," that means garbage, like the lowest of the low, that, you know, the lowest person comes. And what I want to say is that's maybe how some may have seen you, you know, because of your color, because of your accent, but that's not who you are, right? Mm-hmm. That's not who you are. You were a person who, like you mentioned, you were dedicated to education and you had the score to prove it, but you weren't treated in that way. So I want to find out from you, if you don't mind, how you may envision the Supreme Court ruling on affirmative action. I'm going to read what affirmative action is, the actual definition. It's in the practice or policy of favoring individuals belonging to groups regarded as disadvantaged or subject to discrimination. And I read that because that's what you mentioned. You were subject to discrimination based on the grouping that someone placed you in due to the color of your skin, your accent, maybe your immigrant status. And so at one point, this was regarded as necessary for groups that were discriminated against or systemically had to fight racism to get ahead, to get the foot in the door, so to speak, because otherwise it's just who you know making the ability to, or having the ability to find their destiny. However, I'm not sure with what you think, because I also know as a higher education administrator, you work in HEOP, Higher Education Opportunity Program. So do you believe that affirmative action has advanced those types of programs that were important to allowing others that I mentioned in multicultural student affairs, the other groups, to become part of the community so they can be educated and seen as just like the majority of the students? Or do you see it as a problem that you had to overcome because of people seeing you maybe being placed in a position due to affirmative action and not your actual earning it as your grades would suggest. If you have any thoughts on
that. I'm thinking of your question in the moment. I think it might be a combination of both, but more so the first rather than the latter part of your statement. We live in a society where we live in a country, a society, and a culture where we know racism still exists and racism is still at play, and where we know that certain groups, ethnic groups, have been historically disadvantaged in many ways within the legal system and in the culture as well. And so affirmative action rule in education was put in place for that. You mentioned the Author-O-Eve Higher Education Opportunity Program, which targeted students who were educationally disadvantaged. So it specifically targeted students who came from school systems that didn't provide adequate or equal or equitable education to students of color or ethnic minorities. And so it aimed to right some of those wrongs by providing access to higher education for those students. And so just like the need for a HEOP, I still think there's a need for affirmative action. So the ruling was, very disheartening for me. As an individual who works in education, when we think about the question of, is it necessary? Yes, because racism still exists. There are people who still act within their racist ideologies and viewpoint and, and say, for example, in real estate would redline, and an individual or a community. So we know that outside, within and outside of education, there are practices on an individual level and a community level that disadvantages ethnic minorities, and not just Black ethnic minorities, all ethnic minorities, Hispanic ethnic minorities, Asian ethnic minorities. So the ruling, it's affirmative action was put in place to help these communities, individuals within these communities or communities as an ethnic communities, provide them with an opportunity to be able to rise above some of these obstacles from a legal standpoint, giving universities permission to consider race or ethnicity in their admissions practices. But if we one thing I want to say, because as you mentioned earlier on, I did work in admissions, and typically race isn't, or ethnicity isn't, the only factor that is considered. It may be one of the factor if a particular school is seeking to diversify its community, but it's not the only factor. The students who are brought in, and even as a student, if you're a high school student now and you go to an admissions presentation, the admissions advisor counselor will tell you, we take a holistic perspective when looking at your application, and we're going to look at your essays, and we're going to look at your extracurricular activities, and we're going to look at, if you participated in any leadership organization, and we're going to look at your grades and your SAT and ACT scores, and all of those things are considered. And the students who are admitted, and it's shared with you by admissions advisors, counselors, and so on, students who are admitted in a university, when they say, hey, how do I assess if I'm a fit for this school? You're always given a range. Students who attend this university have a GPA between 3.2 and 3.8, for example, and an SAT score between 1180 and 1550, or whatever the case may be. So when a student of color gets into a university, it's not on the basis just of their race, or their ethnicity. All of their entire academic portfolio is examined the same as it is for the ethnic majority. You know, so what affirmative action did in allowing race to be a part of that consideration is take into account the historical racism and racial practices that kind of hindered some of our students to have access to some of the opportunities that the majority had. You know, some of the opportunities. I'm sorry?
What you shared that you experienced when you were in primary school.
Right. And then it's the opportunity of, in terms of the quality of school. So your neighborhood, you know, will determine the quality of school that you go into. And so that determines the quality of education that you get. And the type of school, the quality of school that you go to determines the exposure that you get. You know, I've worked in many public schools, and the public schools in the more diversified neighborhoods or the white neighborhoods went on very different types of field trips than the students in Black majority public schools, if they got to go on field trips, and then also I saw that, you know, and this was post me going to school, because some of these opportunities I didn't have myself, like the students in certain ethnic majority public schools would have even international opportunities, you know, as field trips opportunities that you don't see in, you know, ethnic minority public schools. And obviously the difference is going to be vast when it comes to private schools and what they can afford. And then, you know, when you consider the ability of minorities and immigrants to go to a private school without a scholarship, there are a lot of opportunities that we are excluded from. And so affirmative action allows an admission advisor to take all of that into account, because, you know, an ethnic minority may be able to write about a variety of experiences he or she has had, you know, to show his exposure to cultures and people that an ethnic minority would not have been given the opportunity based on, you know, where they live and, you know, their ethnic background. So it's still very relevant in this time, and just doesn't fully take into account that we are still overcoming a lot of historical racial prejudices that have prevented ethnic minorities from having the full access to, you know, the American dream or equality in America with regards to, you know, schools, as you say, in terms of education or housing or employment, because a lot of roadblocks still exist.
I want to share with you that you're not alone in your take, because Justice Ketanji Brown also feels the way you feel. In fact, I'm going to read a part of what her dissent in the court case, in the Supreme Court's ruling was. She writes, or she states, "The best that can be said of the majority's perspective is that it proceeds ostrich-like from the hope that preventing consideration of race will end racism. But if that is its motivation, the majority proceeds in vain." So clearly you can't wish something away. You can't legislate it away. So the idea that, as you said, everything is going to be equal now, if it's still systemically racist, the environment, then you would still need to have these types of programs in place, policies in place to help bring equity to that kind of admission situation. I would like to say also, knowing that you are a proud mother of two now, that it's not just about you and your experience, but the future of our youth and their experience going forward. So I would like for us to get back to that, but I do want to introduce our special guest, who is a white male, but I say that in the sense that he's, again, one of the best fans of the show. And he converses with me on everything that has to do with the makeup of communities. And we enjoy having that conversation. Today, he wants to share why it's really important to support stations that allow for conversations like race and race talks, and to talk about race and ethnicity. I also will have, I would let him know that we're going to give him more of an opportunity to talk about the specific ways that the listeners can engage in support for the network, this radio show, managed station manager and management. But share a few words about who you are right now and why you are the number one fan of Race Talks. And this is Garrett Roche.
Thank you, dearest Kimberly. Well, I will say straight off the bat that my experience with WGXC, and I'd love to see this happen multiplied times 10, is unlike the talking heads in the mainstream media, the talking as what's happening right here at this very moment on this radio station is in some areas here and there, and to an even further degree can be turned into actions. Because as I say, we need a swift blow to the status quo. And we have our pledge drive going now, primarily a pledge drive encouraging listeners and all supporters to donate online specifically. If we're going to have this technology that has all these gremlins in it and everything, at least let's use it for positivity, because there's power in positivity, as I say. And we can, any of us can go, I am a sustaining supporter myself, and we can go to wgxc.org/donate, click the red donate button up at the top left-hand corner of the screen, or just in case, many out there do not have internet access, and it's all equal to be extremely fair to them as well. They can call 518-697-7400 or post it through the mail, through the U.S. Postal Service, also known as snail mail by some. I love it myself. I do many snail mail letters with pen pals around the country and the world. It can be more engaging at times than only sending electronic messages back and forth into infinity, but they're welcome to mail their donation, a check to WGXC, care of Wave Farm, 5662 Route 23, P.O. Box 13, ACRA, that's A-C-R-A, New York, 12405.
Well, I think that's wonderful that you share all those numbers with people. Of course, if you're driving listening to us, or if you were eating while listening to us, you probably didn't get all of that information. So we're going to share that again after we do our premiere segment called Race Talks Jeopardy. So normally at this time, we would have a conversation just in general about whatever topic that we have stated. Maybe there's something that we want to add more about educating our youth or about affirmative action. And certainly there may be time left over after this to be able to share a few last thoughts. But I really want to get to first, and I want to add to what Garrett has shared with the listeners. Play this game with us. And if you find that you're not answering the questions correctly, each question you didn't get correct, why don't you donate $5 to the station? And again, we're going to give you that station information, because how else will you get to learn about new things without putting your money where your mouth is, so to speak? So if you like what you're listening to, definitely you want to keep information like this on air, conversations continuing like this on air. And so donating to the station, because we are a nonprofit station, you will be able to share your voice in this way. So this is a game show, And I see that we have Kimora getting ready. She's looking like, okay, am I going to answer these questions correctly? I don't know. I'm going to tell you, I have a little bit of a problem with this, but I think it's fun. It's a fun way to get listeners engaged in supporting the show. So are you game, Kimoy? That's a smile. I take a yes as a smile. Okay. So I'm going to ask the question, and the answer is going to be given in a question, right? And the first person who answers the question correct gets a point. And we have Joey White, our team programmer here. She's going to take score. And at the end, we're going to find out which person, and you can guess, right? You don't have to already know, but you can guess. So the first question, it goes to whoever wants to answer the question first. Who was the first African-American woman to receive a patent for the cabinet? Was it Althea Gibson, Shirley Chisholm, or Sarah E. Good?
Just ding.
Okay, go ahead.
I'm pretty sure, but forgive me if I'm wrong, who is Shirley Chisholm?
No. Okay, so you have to. It's a try. Shirley Chisholm was a good answer because that name is familiar, right? What do you think, Kimora? You have Althea Gibson and Sarah E. Good.
I knew it wasn't Shirley Chisholm, but I'm not sure of the right answer, so I'm going to make a guess at Miss Good.
Ding, 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 ding. First point to Kimora.
Okay, very good.
Okay, so Shirley Chisholm, I know everyone is, but Shirley Chisholm, she was a political trailblazer. And Althea Gibson, I love this sport, tennis. She was a trailblazer in tennis. But all were African-American women, of course. So we don't have time for a lot of questions, so I'm going to jump around. How about this one? Who was the first Irish immigrant to come to the United States? We're talking about all different ethnicities here on Race Talk. So was it Margaret Foley, Edna O'Brien, or Annie Moore?
Annie Moore.
It's like you're saying Annie Moore, but yes, it's Annie Moore.
Kimora, maybe the signal, Annie Moore. Yes, A-N-N-I-E.
Up in first, because I think then you can get that 50-50 kind of answer, right? Okay, we are tied. Are we going to break the tie? Okay, this one is good. Who was the first African-American WNBA player to perform a dunk? Was it Candace Parker, Lisa Leslie, or Lucia Harris? I thought to go easy with you guys because this is sports and this is kind of, you know, more recent. So I know the listeners have this answer because they're probably Googling it.
I will take a guess. At Lisa Leslie.
Ding, ding, ding. That is Lisa Leslie. It's the first time you came in to answer the question and beat out our favorite fan. But I think if we end it right now, do we have more time? I don't know. Do we have time for two more or a tie?
Two more.
Two more. Okay, I was trying to get you to win already. Okay, before we have two more questions. The next question is, which city held the first national convention of African American women? Was it Albany, New York, Augusta, Maine, or Boston, Massachusetts? Playing the Jeopardy music.
Oh, well, Joy wants to answer. Oh, no, you're counting down. I'll guess I'm between Albany and Boston, so I'm going to guess Albany.
Do we have a question coming from you? Garrett, do you want to do the 50-50?
Oh, certainly. I will say Boston.
I think she gave that to you. Now we're what, tied against Boston, Massachusetts? Was it? Okay, I'm trying to find a good one here. The last one. Okay, I think the last one is going to be this one. Okay. Who was the first female prime minister in the Caribbean? Was it Eugenia Charles, Michel Duvivier, Pierre Louis, Eartha Pascal Trouillot?
Did you say three names or two?
It's, well, one person has four names here, so I'll try it again. One guess is Michel Duvivier, Pierre Louis. The second person is Eartha Pascal Trouillot. Or Eugenia Charles. Okay, if you're
listening, but I do not know the answer to that.
Well, I would think it was someone who it's actually not. If that's a hint that you would like to have.
Well, then I pick answer C.
Eugenia Charles, that's the answer. Ding, ding, ding. Woo-hoo! I keep trying to get you.
My share.
Eugenia Charles. Of course, you're supposed to say, who is Eugenia Charles? But okay, we don't have to. what does she win? I think you win the last word.
Right. The opportunity to donate since you're doing a drive.
Oh, wonderful. I think that's an awesome idea. You can be the first to donate. So we need to know where you're going to donate. For those of you who didn't answer those questions right, I think you're paying up to $20 to WGXC, or you could become a sustaining supporter. And one can ask, what does that mean, a sustaining supporter? Garrett, you said you were one. What's a sustaining supporter?
A sustaining supporter is one who gives a monthly donation of their choosing from the selections they can see online when they go to wgxc.org/donate. They can do as little as $5 per month, which is as much as 17 cents per day.
And that comes to, if my math is right, $60 a year?
Yes, I believe so.
Yeah, so a nominal charge for an opportunity to really support conversations and music, a lot of enhancements with our technology for our wonderful station, WGXC 90.7 FM. Any last words on how to share this support, Garrett?
Oh, positively. How we can share it is this show, along with all shows on WGXC, after they're broadcasted live, they're saved in the archives. And we'd like to remember that even shows from months or years ago, old shows are new shows to new ears. So this archive this evening can be recycled around the country and the world, and with hopes of not just talking, not just listening, but doing as a result of the talking and the listening, taking action both within the actions we have on this station and then taking it even outside of the station, amongst our friends, our families, our neighbors, and everyone else who's close and who has the potential to be close to us around Hudson, New York, where this is broadcast out of, or around the country and the world.
And I
it's time
add,
to make history.
Great. And I want to add, one way of acting is to get involved with anything local, politic-wise. I mean, we have in this area of the show in Hudson and Ingram and in Albany, we have a lot of races that are going on that isn't the larger races for politicians to who are going to be the ones to vote on types of laws, just like this policy of affirmative action. And if you're hearing that you would be akin to Ketanji Brown and our guest here, Kimora Briscoe, and myself too, I believe, I don't have to believe it, I was a product, if we want to call it a product, of affirmative action. One of my first jobs out of undergrad was a woman who was very clear to share with me that if it wasn't because I was an African-American woman, I wouldn't have even been able to get through the door, because she was interested in meeting someone from the college that I went to and graduated from undergrad, which was Spelman College. She had just read an article about it. And though I didn't fit the bill, I did not graduate from an Ivy League institution, which is the only one that they wanted to see. She shared with me how she put my name, my resume, in the stack with the others that was to go forward. So I wouldn't have even had the opportunity to even meet with her, to talk to her, or to take the test that ended up giving me that position, had it not been that she wanted to affirm my opportunity to have a position, or to actually get my foot in the door to possibly have a position. And that was as a legal assistant. So it wasn't, you know, it was a very first year type of position. And it was at the World Trade Center that, of course, is no longer with us. But that was the opportunity that I wouldn't have had, had it not been for that particular policy. So people, if you want to show your support, do it financially, do it actively with your voice also. I would like to have Kimora share the last word on what you find is important that people would do to support our youth in education, something that maybe someone has had helped you with, like you mentioned earlier, or something that maybe one of these programs, like the HEOP programs, would be beneficial to students looking forward to higher education degrees.
Well, now that affirmative action has been overturned, it seems like the future for programs like HEOP will also come to an end unless something is done about that. I would simply say to individuals, the point of affirmative action was a legal or political move on the part of our nation to help right some of the wrongs of our ancestors and what our parents and some ourselves, our parents, grandparents, and some of ourselves have experienced in this nation. Affirmative action doesn't mean that, you know, as Kimberly was alluding to earlier in the conversation, that students of color do not have the same ability or credentials as the majority. And I cannot sit at the same levels if given the opportunity. So I would say to all, if you have a young person of color in front of you and an opportunity that you can provide to them, just give them equal consideration. And maybe consider providing, maybe consider, you know, given the maybe the scope of your work or what the opportunity is and say how many students or employees you're going to take in, maybe consider race or ethnicity when it comes to just providing providing additional perspectives for your organization or additional experiences for the people within your organization to have, you know, consider ethnicity and consider giving them the chance to, you know, work within your organization or join an educational program. You know, not everything we do because it's in writing. So just because affirmative action is no longer a written law doesn't mean that, just like there are racist practices that takes place and racism isn't written in the law, so we can still take affirmative actions without having our government tell us to do so. So just continue to provide opportunities for people of all ethnic groups and provide equal, considerate, holistic considerations in your decision is what I would say.
And I will say there are people who want to say, can't we all just get along? Can it all be on even keel? Isn't that what we're looking to have, where we don't have to put down what our race or ethnicity is? One race, the human race, is the one thing that we all should recognize. And to that, I will add that it's important for us to know who our identity and to value our culture, our ethnicity, whether you go to a Ukrainian church or a Polish organization or an African-American, movie or what else do they mention as, or listen to country music. Or whatever your thing is, everyone can enjoy and join in. So it is really imperative that we do keep our identity. We don't want to not have an identity. Being from Jamaica is a good, wonderful thing because it makes you who you are, and you are a beautiful person. Without your ethnicity and your identity, then you are just like everyone else. And I have been fortunate to be around young people who didn't, specifically because they were of a lighter hue, didn't believe that they had any ethnicity. And they didn't feel like they measured up because, you know, they can't check any creative box. And I said, actually, checking a box just means that you have identified with whatever group you want to identify with. However, there are people now who are multi-ethnic. They are seen and or share with their friends and family that they don't feel like they're one or the other. I would like a little bit of that perspective from you in these few minutes. Do you ever go back to the nation that you originated from and feel like you're an American going back to Jamaica, or that you're Jamaican, or that the Jamaican hashtag Jamaican / or Jamaican hyphen American? What is your ethnic identity, would you say?
My ethnic identity is Jamaican. it's Jamaican. My ethnic identity, actually, I take that back. It is hyphenated. I live in America. My culture is American. But I am very much still rooted in my Jamaican history and culture as well, or my cultural identity as a Jamaican. When I go to Jamaica, I identify as Jamaican, but having lived the vast majority of my life in America, it's very easy for Jamaicans to know that I'm a hyphenated individual and that I am American. So I would say, as you said earlier, I guess I am multicultural, if not multi-ethnic as well. So I do identify myself as, now that I think about it, because I'm Jamaican because that's where my natural inclination is to, but when I give thought to it, I am hyphenated.
And then my last question to you, and you can actually sharing this to Garrett. What would you say to being asked what your goal is for America in the future? Will it be a nation where we still allow for immigration, or are we getting to that point where there's too much immigration and we need to really make sure we have enough resources for those who are already in the United States? What are your thoughts on that in the short period we have right now before we go off air? And this is a, I just want to share, this question comes because we have people who come from other nations. We are all from other nations, in fact, except for the native populations that are here. And some people, they may change their mind as they get older and they see that there is a different opportunities made available for certain people and not for everyone. So what is your thoughts on keeping the door open, keeping the light in the lantern for others coming to these shores of America? Quoting somewhat Emma Lazarus there.
I mean, we are, you know, as you referred back to Emma Lazarus, we are a nation of immigrants. That is a core part of our identity. But just thinking about the reality of present day times and present day world, we live in a global economy. Like, you can't get rid of immigration, whichever nation you're on. People are coming and going and moving and seeking opportunities always. So in this age where we're at, you can't stop immigration. Maybe in this nation you can do your best to slow things down as much as possible, but you're not going to end immigration. And I think it's too much a part of our identity as a nation, that, you know, as a people, we will not agree to, hopefully, I say that in a hopeful way, agree to, you know, laws or regulations that, you know, completely seize an end to allowing other ethnicities and nations to join our melting pot that is here.
I concur. Now, what are your thoughts? And you have about 1 minute to share them, Garrett.
Absolutely. Thank you, Kimberly. I concur as well. And thank you, Kimoy, tremendously. I often think about it in terms of, if there were no man-made borders to begin with, there would be no issue of illegal immigrants. And I think what will help combat racism against other ethnicities remaining here who are citizens and other ethnicities continuing to come into the United States as immigrants are people to take a look at themselves in this country, including who have been born and raised and have generations back here, because there's a severe issue of extreme social anxiety and breakdown and stress and addiction to depression medication. And why is this happening in a country that claims to be, you know, free and accepting of all, and that anyone can make a living and anyone can become successful? So that's something that must be questioned. And I also want to add quickly, thank you, Kimoy, for keeping a positive attitude and a smile on your face despite your hurdles. Also, my dad was from Richmond Hill as well. And there's a person in history named Robert Briscoe, who was the first Jewish mayor of Dublin, Ireland. Just to add that.
I think you should get your DNA checked, Kimoy. And on that note, I would like to thank my guests.
Thank you, Kimberly. Evermore.
Kimoy Briscoe and Garrett Roche of the Roche Charlotte Truth. Please visit www.kimberlyirwin.me. If you would like an opportunity to be a guest talker on Race Talks, I want to thank my assistants, Joey and Margaret Ann. They were awesome. A lot of those questions came from them. And I just want you to give back to www.wayfarm.org and experience in your life, as we do in ours, love, beauty, and joy. See you next month, every third Tuesday of the month at 7 p.m. on WGXC 90.7 FM. You will find us at Race Talk, talking the very necessary talk. Have a great